World at War is the Magic the Gathering podcast where we make the cards. This is going to be a treat because it's the only R&D you can sit in on. Welcome to World at War number 9. Tonight we have a very special treat, everybody. We got a new co-host. Joe, why don't you introduce yourself?
My name's Joe. I'm a player from San Diego, California. There is a roughly 60-card size gap in my magical repertoire. I pretty much just do drafts, and I play some EDH. But I wrote into the show after listening to some episodes, and Anthony invited me on, and I'm pretty happy to be here.
Yeah, we've been working on my Planeswalker that everyone was trying to make, and I've been having a pretty tough time with it. Joe helped me out a lot, and we finished it up. So it's exactly the way I want it, or very close to that. So he was a lot of help. And we're having a problem with Jack here, so we'll just head right in and talk about my Planeswalker. Alright, so this guy is Grukar War Marshal. He costs red, red, white. And he starts off with 4 loyalty counters. So, he only has 2 abilities, but to replace a third ability, he has a static ability. And it says, whenever a creature you own attacks or blocks, put a loyalty counter on Grukar. Let's just go into the abilities here. -4, put a 2/2 red dwarf creature token with haste onto the battlefield. And -20, untap all creatures and gain control of them until end of turn. They gain haste until end of turn. So basically, Insurrection.
I've got to admit, that's pretty sexy.
Yeah, so, Jack, were you here for, did you hear the whole thing?
Absolutely not.
Alright, so, starts with 4 loyalty counters, costs red, red, white. He has a static ability that says, whenever a creature you own attacks or blocks, put a loyalty counter on Grukar is his name. He has -4, put a 2/2 red dwarf creature token with haste onto the battlefield, and -20 for insurrection.
And how many does he enter the field with?
4.
I like that. I think that's actually an interesting way to explore the possibility of maybe giving it a way to up its loyalty counters very quickly without the use of cheating, like clock spin and
proliferation
and doubling season and cards like that. So I've got to hand it off to you. This has been 2 weeks in a row when you've come up with original, non-batshit insane ideas. So yeah, like I like it, man. It's really good.
Well, to get this idea pretty almost perfect, I had to talk it over for a few hours with Joe. And we were debating what should the static ability be, because I didn't really like what I had before, so I took a look at...
What you had before was way too strong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, what I wanted to do was take a look at Joe's Planeswalker and see if I got any ideas from that. And he had a static ability as well, so I just kind of stole that idea and put one on my own.
Because there's no kind of creativity like other people's creativity. I completely agree.
Exactly.
Other people's creativity is actually just the best kind.
Yeah, because then you don't have to do all the work, and I mean, they've already outsourced it to themselves, so yeah, it's fantastic.
Yeah, I have a larger version to work, so I'm on board with that.
Yeah, and we were debating what should the trigger be. Because before I had it as whenever a creature enters the battlefield, and that just seemed too slow or too fast, depending on the circumstances. So then I changed it to whenever a creature enters the battlefield or dies, but that would have been much too powerful, I think. And then we tried to have it be more interactive with combat and changing it to whenever a creature attacks or blocks. But then that's any creature. So it's still too powerful. It gets too many counters too quickly. So so we added in creatures you control only give counters to Grukar. And all the while, I was thinking, this is probably going to make lots of insurrection chains. You just swing with a bunch of guys, and then you get maybe 15 counters on them in a big multiplayer game, or more.
Mm-hmm.
And then just next turn you can insurrection again or something. So I change it to whenever a creature you own attacks or blocks, so it's a lot less broken.
I like it. I think it's a very interesting way to explore some design space with Planeswalkers that, I mean, even the Wizards of the Coast themselves, you know, Hallowed Be Thy Name and all their creative glory is only just now getting to explore.
Yeah, and Joe, do you want to talk about the thing we had being with the fact that he doesn't have any ability that he can do right away when he comes into play?
Sure. So while we were talking over Anthony's design, we kept going back and forth about how his only usable ability the turn you cast him will kill him, because his first ability is -4, and he starts with 4 loyalty. And I think that you would probably want to tweak the numbers, and I'll go to my grave claiming this, but you would probably want to tweak the numbers such that he can activate an ability and not die the turn he comes into play, since that's one of the main design guidelines that are used for all the existing Planeswalkers. Even if their abilities don't do anything the turn you cast them, you can still activate a plus ability on every Planeswalker the turn you cast them, except in some really odd circumstances. They should be usable into an empty board without losing the card. And Anthony and I were having a discussion about it, and you can activate Grukar into an empty board, but then you just end up with a 2-2 token, which isn't usually the kind of trade you want to make for your Planeswalker.
Exactly. And late game, if you have something with haste, you can play that and then attack with it and then be able to use his ability. But that's pretty much the only thing. Otherwise, you have to wait a turn. I'm just thinking that this is a Planeswalker more for the early game, because he only costs 3. So you're probably going to have a creature out before turn 3, because I think this guy goes into an aggro deck. And with that, you can attack, put a counter on, and then make the token. Although it's still kind of unsatisfying to have a token with haste that's not attacking the turn it comes into play.
Yeah, second main phase haste guys are usually happening because you made a mistake.
Mm-hmm. But that seems like the only way to keep it fair, but still not that bad.
Yeah, I think you could definitely revisit the numbers. Like, he might have to cost 4 instead of 3, but then he could have a starting loyalty that's high enough to let him make a token immediately.
Yeah, maybe. Jack, your thoughts? Jack?
Sorry, I'm here. My mic is muted.
Okay.
I think this would go actually really well, especially like in commander circumstances where you have somebody who is playing aggro necessarily, and aggro is not really a dominant archetype in that format. And this would give decks such as that a serious shot in the arm. Aggro is incredibly difficult to play in EDH. Anthony, I'm not sure how familiar you are with it, but...
Oh, yeah, I've played...
Yeah, so you know exactly what I'm talking about when I say, like, if you come and you're the guy that dumps his handful of creatures, like, you're going to have some problems.
Exactly. Turn 1, Saracen, it happens quite a lot.
Yeah. So this is, I think this gives decks like that an advantage, and anytime, like, I see, I like to think of Magic in very healthy terms, and while I typically am speaking about Commander, Magic as a whole, and anytime you have something that gives a... perhaps flailing strategy, that little boost it needs to level the playing field, I think that's healthy. And I think this definitely is going to help out a lot. And considering your previous incarnation, I like this a lot better. And I think for all of us here at World of War, we're starting to see a maturity of design, and I like that.
Well, what I wanted to do with the Planeswalker is, I like Gideon's design, but it's just unsatisfying to have to attack into him. So I wanted.
Oh, it's so awkward. Is it not the most awkward thing in the world? I mean, first of all, to play that, I mean, basically that's like, as, let's say you're the control player, right? And you activate his attack into him ability.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know about you guys, but I'd say probably 3 out of 5 times the attack kills Gideon. So, like, you pay 5 mana in fog for a turn, right?
Yeah.
Which is really, really awkward. And then it doesn't really necessarily promote, like, interactivity in the game state, really. I mean, all it does is it just has direct, it lures for a turn, which is really, really awkward. And I know that can come in very advantageous depending on the strategy. But then it seems like he always gets dropped because that ability is simply not strong enough. He's a good finisher, but not necessarily something you want. So, yeah, I agree. He's really awkward.
So I liked what he had going, and so I wanted to make the same talk to interact with the combat. And I realized that the first version was just awkward and not too good or not good enough depending on the circumstances. So I tweaked it a bit, and with Joe's help, I came up with this. So it still interacts with combat, but not so heavily that you just change the game into not playing Magic.
But, I mean, who wants to play Magic? I mean, really.
Yeah. All right, so I think that's it for my card. Who wants to go next?
Jason, sure, I guess. Go ahead.
Okay. So the Planeswalker I designed, like Anthony mentioned, was one that was designed with a static ability. Let me just pull it up here. So the Planeswalker's name is Kelnor Arisen. He costs 3 white-black and starts with 3 loyalty. He has -1. Target creature gets +1/+1 and gains flying and lifelink until end of turn. Second ability also for -1. Target opponent reveals his or her hand. You choose a non-land card from it. That player discards that card. And -X. Destroy target non-land permanent with converted mana cost X or less. His static ability is if he would gain life, you may put that many loyalty counters on Kelnor Arisen instead.
Oh, wow.
How many counters does he start off with?
He starts with 3.
Okay.
I see some serious abuse potential here, but that's because I'm a very deviously minded fellow.
Yeah, it's costed quite effectively for its abilities, and I like that. It doesn't cost too little, and it doesn't cost so much that it's not playable. It's Spencer's cost, and his abilities are, in my opinion, better. So he would definitely see more play.
I think at the very least, I mean, this you're talking about blowing up permanents and everything here. This guy would definitely be a tournament staple.
Yeah, and I thought it was important to try to design an ultimate ability that wouldn't completely ruin the game if you did somehow manage to get unbounded amounts of loyalty counters on him. Because the worst case is that you kill your opponent's best permanent, which is a very good situation, but it doesn't completely ruin a game state. Your opponent still has a chance to recover.
Because it's only once per turn, and that's inherent to the Planeswalker.
Right. And if you're playing him into a board state where you don't have any particular synergies, like you don't already have a creature with lifelink out, or you don't already have a life gain source out, then he's effectively at 2 starting loyalty when you use one of his -1 abilities, and then if your creature connects, you get more loyalty counters on him. And then on the following turn, you can vindicate something.
I'm just thinking that in that respect, He gives you. Actually, never mind. I was being silly. I was gonna try to compare it to the new Garruk, but because this guy doesn't have any actual ability, like plus abilities or zero abilities, it would be kind of a silly comparison.
It's not necessarily true.
With Garruk, his second zero ability makes a 2/2 wolf, and then his first zero ability, if your opponent doesn't have a smaller creature that he can fight, you can just fight the wolf.
Right.
So they basically give you all the tools that you need without making you work for it at all.
Mm-hmm.
And with Kelnor, I was going to say the same thing about his minus one, his first minus one ability, that gives the creature lifelink to be able to get him up there.
Yeah, you do need something to work with him. I was considering a design where he would have a minus ability that made you gain some life, that felt like it was just a really awkward way of giving him a plus ability that didn't do anything.
Yeah.
Hmm.
But it turns the lifelink into loyalty link, sort of.
Right.
And just erases the lifelink and just gives him the counters instead. But sometimes you really want that lifelink as opposed to having the counters. And it's kind of tough to make that decision when you want the counters and when you want the life.
Right, and I think it prevents opponents from being put in a position where they can't raise either your life total or his loyalty, because when you do gain life, you make the decision to either add to your life total or to add to his loyalty. So if your life total is precarious enough, then it might make sense to just take the life anyway and leave him at a low loyalty and put him at risk.
Yeah. It makes for a lot more strategic play. And while I like that part, it's sometimes tough on the players.
Well, I mean, if you're intelligent enough of a player and you can read the situation correctly, baiting somebody with a Planeswalker might be the best thing you can do.
Yeah, because Planeswalkers have big things that people automatically want to target because they're Planeswalkers.
Yes.
They're just huge things, and sometimes people can just wrongly just do bad threat assessment and target the Planeswalker when really your opponent is the real threat.
Right. That's actually what made me what I'll do is, like, if I know what kind of meta I'm going into, and this is going to sound very douchebaggy, and I can assess that perhaps the players aren't the most skilled and can't do threat assessment, which threat assessment is a very nebulous term. People should remember that. Threat assessment can mean a lot of different things to a lot of different people, so let's just go ahead and get that out of the way. But if I have a feeling that they'll react more strongly to, say, Jace the Mind Sculptor, Gideon, Liliana the Veil, any of these hitting the table more so than they will a Squadron Hawk with a sword, because people can misread that situation, then by all means, I'll play that. Like, it was the reason I actually played Jace Beller in Empire of Mancer's Ascension for well into a month after I realized how bad that card was. Because, I hate to say it, Magic players are dumb and they'll attack the Planeswalker.
Yeah, I think I've very rarely seen a Planeswalker live more than a turn in a game of EDH.
Well, what I also want to say is, like your Planeswalker, we also had this problem with mine. Not so much of a problem, but it makes the player have to think a lot more than they normally would. Because of the minus four ability and having exactly four counters to start off with, for my Planeswalker, it makes you think whether you want the creature or the Planeswalker. And it's just, sometimes it's difficult.
It's definitely much in the same way that damage going on the stack used to separate the scrubs from the not-so-scrubby. Planeswalkers are kind of that new standard over the course of a game. Don't you guys think?
Yeah, I think that learning to play with Planeswalkers correctly is very difficult.
Especially since, like, I mean, how many times did you see somebody play Mind Sculptor and, like, all they did was brainstorm with it continuously?
Yeah, that is exactly the example I was going to use. I think that Planeswalkers as complex as him are going to be the exception rather than the rule. But they're a very difficult card type to learn to use well.
And I can think of another exception in Venser I talked about already, because everybody forgets that he has that minus one ability.
Oh, that's so good.
And you can use that to your advantage a lot. It's only minus one, and it's just unblockable.
So if I'm minus one in Venser, I'm not blinking my Wall of Omens. So I get to draw way less cards that way.
Yeah, because one card is a lot better than six damage every turn.
Yeah, exactly.
You guys are smart asses.
Well, why don't you just blink your Spreading Seas then?
Yeah, because Spreading Seas can legitimately shut down a Valakut deck, especially if the player's bad and can't do proper threat assessment then and work without the red mana.
Yeah, I had a Venture deck. It was kind of more like silly jank because, I don't know, I ran Sun Titan to get back my Tumble Magnets.
That sure is not silly jank.
And then maybe get back my Phyrexian Revokers, and you can blink it to name a different thing. And I don't know, it was just silly, but it was fun. So, are we going back to talk about Joe's Planeswalker? Because we just got off on a big tangent.
We did wander off a little bit.
Yeah. So, last thing that was sort of related to it was threat assessment and the Planeswalker. So, the minus one, I'm sorry, there are two minus ones, it gets kind of confusing. The second activated ability, where the opponent discards a card. I'm not really sure about that one. Because, I don't know, it just doesn't seem big enough.
Yeah, that was my concern as well. I wanted to make sure that he had an ability that you could use if you happen to control no creatures, or if it was actually just really bad to try to jump one of your guys. So I arrived at that one, which is based on Castigate, which is a pretty solid black-white card. But I'm not too happy with it. It's fairly boring and utilitarian, and it doesn't fit in well with the whole theme of kind of, you know, the Planeswalker being related to life and making use of all the loyalty he can gain from it.
Well, if you want to compare it to a different Planeswalker, you can compare it to the first Liliana Vess. It costs the same amount of mana, and the discarding a card is a plus one. Granted, you're not choosing what card that they discard, but they're still discarding the card. And she's not losing anything from it. That's what builds her up. And I'm not sure if this is so flavorful with the name Kelnor the Risen. It might be better if it was Kelnor the Vengeful. And you had it like that. With a
different I was considering that, but ended up steering away from it because of a Johnny Vengeance. It was sounding too close to me.
Right. So, I would suggest maybe changing that to something more related to... I'm not really sure, though, because with the first one...
How about Kelnor the Dark Knight Rising or something?
I think that's probably the most optimal name you could give the card.
Yeah, it might be vague copyright infringement, but like anybody goes through with that anymore. Come on.
Yeah, well, I just want to say the first activated ability is very... You can relate it to both colors, black and white, gaining flying and lifelink, because
right. With
white you have the angels, and with black you have the vampires. Both flying and lifelink are seen on both of those creature types. And then with the Vindicate itself is a black and white card. So if you have the minus one being a purely black ability, I don't think that fits in with the rest.
No, it doesn't exactly. It is based on Castigate, which is black-white, except that this ability has the player just discard the card and Castigate is an exile. But it's not really the sexiest ability to attach to a Planeswalker, especially since it's so similar to Liliana's original version and to Karn's plus four.
Yeah, I would say maybe changing the ability to, instead of discarding, something more oriented to creatures, because both black and white are very creature-oriented colors, sort of. And... maybe having something like drain an opponent's creature and then give a boost to one of your own, because that seems like it would fit both colors pretty well.
That's not bad.
Yeah, something like I forget what it's called. I think there was Cankerous Thirst and Eventide. I think Steel Strength also does it. Or, I guess Leeching Bite from New Phyrexia is another example of that. Like, shrink your opponent's creature, pump your own.
Yeah, maybe target creature gets -2/-2, target creature gets +2/+2.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be pretty good.
Yep, I agree.
Good. So, are we moving on to yours, Jack?
I guess we are. Do we have anybody else joining us on the cast tonight?
Well, no, but Chris sent in his Planeswalker for us to talk about because he couldn't be on tonight.
Well, why don't we run through that one first?
All right, so this is a big one. It's got 4 abilities. Anyway, the name is Nissa, Beacon of Hope. She costs 2, a white and a green, starts with 3 loyalty counters. She has +2, regenerate each creature you control. +1, return target card in a graveyard to its owner's hand. -2, until the beginning of your next upkeep, you and planeswalkers you control gain protection from the color of your choice. And -8, destroy all creatures, then return all creature cards from your graveyard to play.
Seems pretty big, actually.
Yeah.
Look at the thing you sent me on Skype about it, but...
That was my first impression. It's very big, a lot of abilities, and they both, not both, they all do fairly relevant things. Because +1, you regrow for a plus ability. That's so big. And
yeah,
then,
I think that's the strongest, or I should say the strongest one that isn't -8. That's a really powerful ability.
Yeah. And then +2 to regenerate each creature you control. Granted, you can only do this at sorcery speed, but it makes combat hell for your opponent on your turn. Because no matter what blocks they make, they're usually not profitable.
Yeah, I think that one is the ability that I like the least, just because it is a sorcery speed activation of something you really want to do at instant speed.
Yeah, because, what's the card? Rapid Vigor, I believe?
Yeah, that's the one you're thinking of.
Regenerate each creature you control for instant. And I don't know about having that on a Planeswalker, because you can only do it at sorcery speed. Maybe...
Maybe...
I think that having this be...
What about creatures you control gain hexproof till the end of turn? No, wait, that's way too strong. Target, regenerate target creature you control. I mean, I don't know, it feels very counterintuitive to have this at sorcery speed, because then what's the point?
Yeah, I think Anthony's right that it can help set you up for some attacks where your opponent doesn't necessarily have good blocks, but it's also totally telegraphed.
Yeah.
So if they can make blocks that don't result in them losing guys, then, you know, you can mash your guys into theirs and maybe push some damage through. But that's usually the best you get out of it, I think. It's really good with Wrath, because you can +2 and then use Day of Judgment.
Yeah, that's really good, but... And she is in the right colors for that, so... That might have been what Chris was going for. We can't really know unless he's on here talking about it, but I just think that the sorcery speed of it is detrimental to the ability because your opponent sees it coming.
Right. It feels more like a way to just add more loyalty counters to Nissa if that's what you want to do versus get a good effect out of the ability.
And telegraphing information is not really cool in Magic.
It feels like the loyalty counters that you get from the ability are better than the resolution of the ability itself.
I actually liked the old Nissa's ability of finding Nissa's Chosen from your deck, and maybe there could be a card to go along with this one as well. Maybe instead of a creature, have it be a sorcery or something like that, or an instant, because if it's an instant, then you're getting it, and it'll be, like, an instant. Maybe it says, +2, search your library for a card called Wrap in Vigor. Well, although that might not fit the flavor, I think it might have to have misses in the name.
That also kind of forces us into, like, if we did Nissa's Regeneration or some crap, Nissa's Favor, I mean...
Just
kind
of a functional reprint of Rap and Vigor, maybe make it cost white as well.
I don't know, that kind of forces us into making a reprint, and I don't really like that, but I mean, that's at least slightly more intuitive than this.
Yeah, you could also stick with the theme that this has chosen had, where they went under the bottom of your library instead of into your graveyard, just so you could keep using them. So you could have a sorcery or instant that did that when you cast it, instead of going to graveyard, would go on bottom, so you could keep tutoring it.
Maybe sort of like a giant growth?
Yeah, I think that's a little more, or at least a little more difficult for your opponent to play around.
Just maybe give it +2/+2 instead, because having it every turn is going to make it +3/+3 a little too good, I think.
Right.
Yeah, I agree.
Because mutagenic growth is +2/+2, and it's free. Whereas this one, you can have it every turn for one mana. So I think that would be good, +2/+2 still.
Yeah, you could do, like, oftentimes the block pump spell will be 2 mana for, you know, +2/+2, and some other block-related effect.
Well, I think they've gotten into the habit of 1 mana spell that gave you +whatever, and then some other effect that makes it, that just changes how you play it or what it does when you play it, because you've had Groundswell, Mutagenic Growth, Mirror and Metal have been a lot of the recent cards like this.
Yeah, that's true.
Alright, so let's go on to some other abilities. -2. Until the beginning of your next upkeep, you and Planeswalker you control gain protection from the color of your choice. What do we have to say about this?
I don't think there's an ability that acts like this on anything else, so it's tough to evaluate.
I agree with that, and I also think that, not Imperial Mask, but Ivory Mask, this really isn't that much worse than Ivory Mask. Or Leyline of Sanctity for some of you people that are playing from M12 forward. So I really don't have a problem with this exactly.
Yeah, I think that at least in the case of Ivory Mask or Leyline of Sanctity, those are permanents that sit out there. So in this case...
Well, they give you Shroud, right?
Yeah.
I'm just thinking that this one gives protection, so it's more like Seth's Tiger, right?
Yeah, I can see that.
So, for people who don't know, it's a white creature with flash, and when it comes into play, you gain protection from the color of your choice until end of turn. And I don't know about it giving Nissa, well, all Planeswalkers, protection from the color, because then it makes them a lot less susceptible to direct damage, but yeah, it makes them a lot less susceptible to direct damage, and they won't be taking damage from creatures of the chosen color. And that's the only way to interact with Planeswalkers, really. Well, the main way is creatures.
I think that you would have to playtest it, but I feel like it's probably fine, since you can't keep using it on her. It's a -2 ability, right?
Yeah, but you save all of your Planeswalkers.
Right. It's definitely very good in combination with other Planeswalkers, so it acts a lot like Gideon's +2.
Well, it's she is white, so you could play this with Gideon and force them to attack Gideon, but give him protection from their most prevalent color.
That would actually be pretty gross. That sounds kind of awesome.
That's just the kind of stuff that I'm concerned about with this -2.
Yeah, there's a chance that it is too good in combination with other planeswalkers, specifically Gideon. But if they're holding burn, they can activate it in response to the ability, at least if it's instant speed.
Yeah, they can.
It does make combat a lot less profitable, but because the ability resolves during your main phase, they have that information when they go to their turn. So if they're, mono red and you pro red your planeswalker, then you just don't attack. So you're not risking your creatures. It's more like a fog for you and your planeswalkers.
Yeah, and I don't know how I would change it or replace the ability or maybe even remove it, but we'd have to talk to Chris about that because this is his planeswalker and we're not sure what he wants to do with it.
Right. If it ends up being too powerful in conjunction with other planeswalkers, you might need to change it to you and target planeswalker you control, so she can't just shield your entire team.
Yeah, because this is a fairly unique ability, and we're not exactly sure how this will go down in actual play.
Yeah, I like the ability, though. It's pretty interesting. I think that there just might need to be potential tweaks on the interactions with other planeswalkers, but I think it's pretty solid.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you have anything to say about this ability?
No, I have absolutely no problems with it. I think it's just fine.
Alright, well, let's move on to the ultimate. -8. Destroy all creatures and return all creature cards from your graveyard to play. So, it's just a beefed up,
Feric Revival?
Well, I was thinking, I can't think of a card, but
Feric Revival, that's the card you're thinking of.
Living Dead.
Oh, Living Death, yeah.
Yeah, Living Death.
Is it all creatures or all your creatures?
It destroys all creatures, but then it returns all your creatures to play.
Okay.
Even the ones that were destroyed this way. So I'm thinking that it's way too powerful. And I don't think it fits very well in white-green. They're both very white abilities, destroying all creatures and returning creatures from your graveyard to play. But it's just so powerful.
It is really powerful. I think it's a pretty awesome ability, though.
Yeah, I'm concerned with how powerful it is.
Well, okay, let's look realistically at this. Let me pull it back up. All right. So it has 3 loyalty counters, and for 4 mana, so realistically speaking, probably the soonest you can get this out is, what, turn 3? Maybe. Unless you've got some kind of crazy mana ramp in your deck, right? Do you know how long it would take for this to actually build up to 8 and how many other relevant abilities you're probably going to want to hit with this thing before then? I honestly don't see this ability firing off that often. I mean, it's really, really powerful. Yeah, I'll give you that. But its power, and especially, considering we've not even got the rest of the set yet, is going to be solely determined by, and this is just my personal opinion, I think how strong the quality of Enter the Battlefield effects are.
Well, also, with cards like Shallow Grave, the cards are leaving the graveyard and entering the battlefield. So you also get the Shallow Grave abilities if you do this.
Yeah, but I mean, we don't have any absolutely back-breaking Shallow Grave creatures yet, do we?
Not yet, but when we start making rares or mythic rare Shallow Grave creatures, they're going to have some pretty big abilities.
Right, but for the meantime, at least, with what we have here, I don't see a problem with this. But see, this is the whole thing with this set. We're going to be going back and constantly revisiting and changing things until things are perfect. So for right now, at least, I honestly don't see a problem with this.
I'm also thinking of this in something like multiplayer formats like EDH, where you know someone's going to be playing a doubling season with Nissa, and then she starts off at 6, you can +2, and then the next turn you can -8.
In that case, I don't feel like it's too much stronger than a Plague Wind, though, because you're investing 2 cards and having your Planeswalker sit out unmolested for a turn. in exchange for Plague Wind plus re-triggering all your come to play or leave play abilities.
Yeah, but then you also have all of your creatures in play.
Well,
and
right.
Whereas your opponents have nothing. Like, Plague Wind, whatever you have on the field right now, it stays on the field, you don't get anything extra, you just destroy all other creatures your opponents control.
Oh, that's true. I guess you do get your entire graveyard back and not just the creatures that were destroyed with that ability.
Yeah. So,
I've got to say, for like I said, I stick by what I said. For the meantime, at least, I really don't see a serious problem with this.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think this is, again, the kind of thing that would require playtesting, because it could end up being really powerful with some kind of self-mill strategy if you can get the ultimate to go off consistently, since you do just get to put your entire yard into play.
Yeah,
Really, the thing to keep in mind is we're going to be doing quite a bit of that as the set keeps evolving as well, so making too harsh of a judgment on any given card, like, unless it's just blandly obvious that it violates the color pie, design, mechanics, power level, however you want to put that, in some way, I think it's kind of bad. We can't hedge too much on, like, what might happen in the future, because we can always go back and adjust that. We have that power, so.
Right.
Yeah.
I think the ability is awesome. I think it's just the kind of thing that you would want to pay attention to as you finish set design.
Oh, definitely. I agree.
It seems like the kind of ability that could become a problem.
Oh, yeah.
Because right now we don't have all the cards, and when we do have all the cards, we have to go over every other card that we've made up to that point, and then evaluate whether it's too good, maybe we get changes to make it better, or just because the environment that we've set the cards in might have changed since we originally made the card.
Gonna be a lot of yawn-inducing conversation going on there.
Yeah, well, we could do that maybe on our own time on weekends when we have free time. But I don't think it's anything that the listeners want to hear.
Well, I think that's part of the fun of doing this podcast, though, is just kind of figuring out what works for them and what works for us and overall what makes the player base happy. Because we are a mini R&D.
Yeah, exactly. So, Jack, on to your Planeswalker.
I guess we've arrived at mine finally, haven't we? Alright, here's the thing. Mine is probably far more boring than either one of y'all's. And my reasoning for this is I try to keep in mind with what I think is extremely flavorful here at the show. And so this is probably maybe flavorful, maybe not, however you want to look at it. And I've gone and made a Sakoi Planeswalker. So he's 2 blue and 3 colorless. His name is Lulzdarn the Fallen. And by all means, like I was saying earlier, we can change anything about these cards, and this name is going to need change, like the cycle of lands I came up with last week. He comes into play with 3 loyalty counters. He's got a -1. Look at target opponent's hand. Draw a card. +1, target creature is plagued and is a black zombie in addition to its other types.
I think we've made it inherent to the plague counter. Like, that's just reminder text for being plagued. It's a black zombie.
Yeah, or whatever. Okay, so it's plagued and it's all modding and yeah.
And then in parentheses we'll just have italic saying it's a zombie in addition to its other creature types and black in addition to its other colors.
Yeah, I agree. My brain farted when I was coming up with the writing on this, but, alright. -6. Return all creatures in your graveyard onto the battlefield. They gain plagued.
I think you should say they are plagued.
They are plagued.
Become plagued. I don't know, something
they,
like that.
They get a job. They have a job. I don't know. It's whatever is most intuitive to people when they're reading it. Something like that.
So you said that the look at target player's hand, the Gitaxian Probe, is -1?
Yes, sir.
And how much loyalty does it start off with?
3.
I just think that the plaguing a creature, that's all that ability does, right?
Yep.
I just think that it doesn't do enough.
I think you should maybe gain intimidate or something.
See, I don't know about that, because then it just makes it worse. It just makes intimidate worse if it's another color. If it's already non-black, because as we said before, we were planning on having this be black has no non-black creatures. I mean, no mono-black creatures. Sorry. And if you're doing this on a
That's right. Yeah, that would be wow. That's terrible.
Yeah, intimidate just makes it so that you can block it with one more kind of color. If you make it black.
Yeah, that's pretty bad. All right, well, what do you guys suggest?
I'm thinking that maybe giving the creature, like, I remember Chris was talking about this, that Maro has said if you use counters as a set of mechanics, you can't use minus one counters and plus one counters as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think Plague is so much of a counter as sort of a game thing that you have to remember, and it might just be marked with a counter. So what I was going to say is target creature is plagued, put a minus one counter on that creature.
Yeah, that works. What are your thoughts, Jer?
I think that you probably do want to keep the kinds of counters separate, because it can get complicated if you have a very complex board to track which creatures are plagued and which have -1/-1 and which, you know, need just plague counters. And I think Anthony's point that just turning the creature into a zombie doesn't really do enough. And that was actually a criticism I had about some of the designs that I listened to in earlier episodes. That you had a few cards that just turned things into zombies, but it didn't mean anything. Like, it made a lot of sense with the set story, because that's kind of what the driving conflict is about, but it didn't have an in-game effect. So I think it would be interesting, and I'm not sure if this actually works, but to try to use -1/-1 counters, but make it represent the plague.
So maybe have cards in the set saying creatures with -1/-1 counters are zombies in addition to their types, and black in addition to their other colors, and then do something else as well.
Yeah, exactly. And that way you can have a cycle of cards that kind of spread the plague, and they make your opponent's creatures worse, and they turn them into zombies, but they also have these other effects.
Maybe I'm just having a little brainstorm of maybe you could have an enchantment that gives zombies you control +2/+2 or something, and then have it so that the creature with -1/-1 counters are zombies. That way you might want to be putting the counters on your own creatures.
Yeah, exactly. And you can use them as countermeasures against your opponent's own zombie making cards, so that if you have a zombie lord out, then his plague spreading stuff isn't as good.
Yeah, it's maybe zombie lords could be giving +2/+2, because they're inherently weaker because it's another color, and most of them are going to be gold and not hybrid. So maybe have it give +2/+2 to other zombies instead of +1/+1, and then be able to make the plague zombies only get +1/+1 because of the plague counter that's already weakening it.
All right, so what we're looking at here is give target creature a -1/-1 counter, it gains plague, blah, blah, blah. If that creature is a zombie already, it gets +1/+1 instead.
Well,
I think Anthony and I went off on a bit of a tangent.
Maybe it can just say, put a -1/-1 counter on target creature. And then, I think what we had was, there are going to be a bunch of cards in the set that say,
right, if something has a -1/-1 counter, it becomes a zombie, blah, 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 right?
Yeah, blah, blah, and then do something with zombies. So you don't have to write all that stuff on your planeswalker. You can just have it be put a minus one counter on target creature.
All right. Now, my question on that is, with this being blue, do you think that flavorfully fits? Do you think maybe I need to, like, change the color mana cost on this at all?
Well, because of the set that it's based in, because of its environment, I think that it does fit the way, because the Merfolk did engineer this plague.
Yeah, I agree, because then it's kind of like the like we had last week with our Legends, where the Sequoia are actually, basically being pushers about the plague. So yeah, I can agree to that. It seemed kind of challenging my traditional notion of, like, what blue does, even though there's been cards like Unstable Mutation and others that actually did have the neg one counter, so, yeah.
I would agree with Jack in general. I don't think that the ultimate in particular is a blue ability. I think you could get away with the minus one counter ability on a mono blue card, especially in a minus one counter set, because you could look at cards like Leech Bonder or I think Sinking Feeling from Shadowmoor that were blue and could add counters. But I think the ultimate definitely feels mono black to me.
All right, well, let's talk about the ultimate. What do you guys think about it?
I'm sorry, I forget what it does. Could you just say it again?
Yeah, sure. -6, return all creatures in your graveyard onto the battlefield. They gain plagued. Or they are plagued, or however you want to word that. I feel like it's too strong, and I'm going to be honest, I purposely designed it that way. Because I want something that flavorfully represents zombies coming out of the grave. But I really couldn't think of how to do that without a really bad Living End or, Fear Revival or whatever ripoff. So whatever you guys can come up with right now is going to be probably more suitable than what I have here.
So a really interesting mechanic, actually, and I haven't had a chance to listen to episode 8 yet, but if you do go with, like, a -1/-1 counter approach for the set, then Persist seems like a good fit. Since it kind of represents things, you know, coming back a second time, and it works really well with Shallow Grave because it brings the creature right back out for another choice, for another chance. So you could have all your creatures come back with Persist and a -1/-1 counter.
Hmm.
But then you have to find a way to remove the -1/-1 counter, or it just doesn't come back.
Right. But then it also turns them into zombies, which is what the ability did in Jack's original design, right?
Yeah, actually, I like what Joe's saying, so we could make it where return all creatures you control from the grave, they have -1/-1 counters on them.
Yeah, I guess Persist is actually redundant. What I meant was that it would act a lot like Persist.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, I actually like that better, because then it also, it does give you some kind of negative side effect for using the ultimate, which does seem more fair, in my opinion, so you don't just have, like, balls to the wall, crazy, like, 1-1 counters taking advantage of this guy.
Yeah, no, I don't think the ultimate is too strong, because it's very comparable to Liliana Vestas, and I think she gets you creatures in all graveyards, not just your own.
It does. She does.
All right, yeah, so I like the changes to this.
Although,
go ahead.
If we're comparing it to her, then it takes the same amount of time to get up to her ultimate's cost. Because she starts off at 5, and she has a +1, and her ultimate costs 8.
Mm-hmm.
So, the way you have it being the same structure, I think you need to change the ultimate somehow, or make the +1 into a +2.
I think the turn it into a +2 is probably going to be the best way to do it. But what about on the ultimate? What if we make it where something like separate creatures in your graveyard into two piles, an opponent chooses one, remove that pile from the game, and put the other pile into play on the battlefield with -1/-1 counters on it.
I mean, you could definitely do that. I don't think the ultimate is so powerful that you need to adjust the power level, or at least I don't feel that way at first glance. Because I think it's okay for Planeswalker ultimates to be powerful, and I don't know that you really need to let your opponent make them worse.
Yeah, because given your opponent a choice, you have to assume that they're going to make the right choice.
Well, not necessarily. I mean, like, think of cards like Fact or Fiction there, where you do have the potential to have some head games and screw around with people.
Exactly. Okay. But
Fact or Fiction is horrendously complex.
But the way you play it, you have to assume that they will make the right choice. Because if you assume that they might split it in some way that favors you, and then you start making plans about what you're going to do with the new cards that you get,
and
they split
it
differently.
There goes all your plans. Yeah, I see what you're saying. And also, I think, like with Chris's Planeswalker, this is one of those cases where it's kind of dependent on how the rest of the set shakes out, so that might be a really bad ability. So I think maybe for the meantime, at least, I'll make a note on this in a workstation about it, and we'll revisit it later. But for the meantime, I think probably making the plus one a plus two might be the best thing to do.
Yeah, I think his first two abilities are relatively marginal, so the loyalty cost probably have a lot of room for adjustment there.
Yeah. Also, just as a note, the plus abilities always come before the zero abilities, and the zero abilities come before the minus abilities.
All right, I'll just let you. I'm sitting here.
All right, so anything else you want to say about our Planeswalkers?
The mine's going to be banned pending the release of the set when we're finished.
That's being released?
Yo, you didn't get that email. I'll be sure to send it as soon as I can.
All right, so I don't know which one would be most likely to be banned. Probably Chris's.
Yeah, because he wouldn't stop arguing about how awesome it is long enough for it to make it work. Ain't that right, Chris? We love you.
So we just have to reprint Mana Leak.
Obviously. And then when we get done with that, we need to take Chris's Planeswalker and put it in a Malira deck somehow. Some way we need to make it happen. Did you guys ever catch the outcome of his Malira Mana Leak deck?
I don't think I'm familiar with this deck.
Oh, okay, so the Malira Mana Leak deck, what happened is we got into a huge argument on Hordes, and Anthony, you can cut this out or leave it in, I don't really care, where Chris was trying to argue about how his FNM deck was going to be viable for kind of what it is, which, I mean, FNM is not a serious competition, and Noyan or me were talking about how the deck dies to Mana Leak. So what he did is he went and he found a way to jam Mana Leak into it, so then he was like, ha! I beat Mana Leak with Mana Leak, right? And he actually did really well that night at FNM because of it. It was hilarious.
Yeah, I mean, that follows. You're supposed to fight fire with fire, and if you can't beat him, join him, etc.
Oh, it was so funny, and he's been rocking that thing for a good 6 weeks now. He makes me laugh so hard sometimes.
Yeah, it's like paying two for the Mana Leak instead of three, but then you have to pay a card. And then, I don't know.
You were going somewhere with that, and I liked it.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you get Mana Leak, you have to pay three, but instead you pay two and discard a card, which just seems kind of worse.
Well, right, but then you use Venser to blink your wall of omens.
No. You use Venser to blink your mnemonic wall to get back your silence. And
to get back your time warp, you mean, right?
Well, why don't you just get Mana Leak back with the mnemonic wall?
Well, yeah, I guess you could do that, too.
Touché, Joe, touché!
I mean, you want to cast as many Mana Leaks as possible, so, you know, probably eight or so would be good.
That'll be enough to counter a Primeval Titan, at least.
Yep.
I mean, not if your opponent has Emrakul mana, right? Actually,
that's like infinite mana.
Infinite mana?
Infinite mana, yeah. Clearly, like, the way Magic players count is 1, 2, 5, and then a shit ton. Have you ever noticed that?
It's infinity manas.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
I guess we're ready to wrap it up then.
Yeah, well, what's going to be our homework for next week?
Oh, that is a pertinent question since we're actually a design podcast.
Yeah.
should we let Joe come up with our homework? I think we ought to.
Yeah, sure, because we're lazy bastards.
I'm totally unprepared for this. I haven't had a chance to listen to episode 8 yet. The Planeswalkers were the homework from that episode, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the homework from episode 7 was a card cycle.
Yeah, that was the homework from number 7.
And then previously it was a legend for each tribe?
Yes. Yep.
Okay, so one thing I'm noticing about this set is that other than Shallow Grave, it doesn't have a lot of mechanical identity, since sets generally have a couple keywords in them. And I know that one goal that R&D has had lately with each set is to bring back an old keyword and then introduce some new ones. So I think the homework should be to come up with the returning keyword for the set, and then also design another one to go with Shallow Grave.
I like that.
Threshold.
Get the hell out of here.
No, is that what you were thinking?
No. We are not going to revisit Threshold, or maybe we are. I don't know. That's the freedom we have with the coming week, right?
Seriously, I was thinking of doing Gravestorm because I really like Future Sight.
Bitter Ordeal.
Yeah, Bitter Ordeal, the one and only Gravestorm card.
Yeah, considering that card has won me more EDH games than anything else, yeah, like that would be a great mechanic to return. I gotta agree.
Yeah.
Limited number of cards, but yeah, it could work.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to appear on a ton of cards, but enough to make its presence known.
I don't think that we might have any infinite sacrifice engines in the set, but if we do, Gravestorm will be broken. Alright, so I guess that's all for this episode of World at War. This is number 9, I guess.
I suppose so. I guess next week we ought to do something major, like have some intro music or some birthday cake or something, huh?
Yeah, birthday cake would be nice.
Actually, by my count, this is episode infinity.
Oh, you're coming on again. I like you.
Thanks. And thanks a lot for having me on. I appreciate the opportunity.
Absolutely no problem.
You're great.
Yeah, we like our co-hosts a lot more when they don't act like completely abstinent jackasses like myself.
I was actually just going to slow roll the jackassery.
Yeah, no need to do that. All right, so shout-outs, guys.
Joe, go ahead. You're a guest.
Again, I just want to say thanks to you guys. This is my podcasting cherry being popped, so again, I appreciate the opportunity. It was a lot of fun.
No problem, man.
I would like to give a shout out to My Little Pony Friendship is Magic.
That was a horrible beat. I actually played EDH with the guy that was standing up giving the seminar, though. He was pretty cool.
Yeah, it's Rainbow Dash, my favorite pony on there. Watch it. Watch some clips on YouTube. I don't know. But it's just My Little Pony on steroids. And some more shout-outs. Let's see. Shout-out to Bitter Ordeal for being so broken, and for having Gravestorm, which I love so much. Shout out to Joe for coming on here, helping out with my Planeswalker, making an awesome Planeswalker, and being awesome.
Thanks.
Yeah. So, Jack, shout out.
Shout out to my main big 30-footed, 30-foot tall Kitty Shroom, the Hedgemon. I love you, baby. Shout out to all the anonymous neckbeards sending me questions over at the Bitter Bitter Man, as always. Shout out to Team Mana Deprived. Shout out to the Knowledge Pool, which I'm now a part of. Shout out to Folgers. Shout out to my stalker for sending me their pinky, because they pinky swore that they'd never leave me alone. And, yeah, there you go.
Very cool. So, I guess that about wraps it up for episode 9 of World at War. Tune in next week to take a listen to our
podcast.
I'm already forgetting. What was our homework? Right, new mechanics and cycles and mechanics that we want to bring back.
Yes. And us, of course. And Joe.
And hopefully Chris.
Yeah, hopefully him too.
Yeah. Miss you, Chris.
We're never going to give you up, and we're never going to let you down.
Never going to say goodbye.
Can we please end the podcast?
Yeah.
All right.
Good night, everybody.
Goodbye.
Good night.